is going on, everybody? Welcome on in to the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, because we are taking a look ahead to week 13 of the NFL season and breaking down our favorite plays and game stacks and everything else you need to know for NFL DFS. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com. Joined here, as always, by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, week 13 is on the horizon. How are you doing today?
I am doing tremendously.
Is there a particular reason?
No, every time we do a podcast, you ask me how I'm doing, and yeah. I always kind of stammer as if it's the first time you've ever asked me that, but I think maybe I need to just interject some more adjectives, so I'll just go with tremendously for today.
Okay, I can live with that. I would echo that sentiment because, Brandon, not only is Marcus Mariota healthy, not only is Baker Mayfield the rookie of the month, but Cody Kessler has been resurrected and is starting on a main slate. What else could I honestly ask for as a football fan?
You also overlooked the fact that Chris Conley's minimum salary against the Raiders.
Right. And Sammy Watkins may not play. I mean, this is our slate. If ever we were to win all of the money, I feel like it has to be this week with a Cody Kessler, Chris Conley slate.
Yeah. You're just going to have to play the double flex or the flex so you can play Mariota and Kessler.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a super flex super week. Flex. I think if Sam Darnold plays, I'll do all the Mariota Darnold lineups. This is not serious, so please do not act upon this information. The Cody Kessler one's kind of serious, but kind of is an operative word there. But I think it's a fun slate, and we get Kansas City back in the main slate. We get the Rams back. There are no buys this week, which stinks from a recap perspective. We're going to die Sunday, but it's exciting for Thursday. It's not Monday yet. We don't have to worry about that. Things are okay for right now, and there is a lot to go through. So we're going to take a look at this slate in just one second. But first, quick reminder that we're drawing for our next iTunes winner on Monday. If you want to win NumberFire Premium for an entire year, get you access to all of our premium DFS tools, our market share trends tool. We have projected snap rates for various players based on each team's expected win rates. All that stuff is available to premium subscribers via NumberFire Premium. If you want that for an entire year, go to iTunes, search for the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed, leave a comment, and rate the podcast. You'll then be entered to win NumberFire Premium for an entire year. Drawing for that on Monday, so get those submissions in as soon as possible. Let's dive right into this main slate. A lot of news to break down from this week, so let's start with the big stuff first. First, Andy Dalton is now on injured reserve due to ligament damage in his thumb. That means that Jeff Driscoll is starting for him this week. But it does sound like A.J. Green will be back. He practiced in a limited fashion on Wednesday with left tackle Cordy Glenn still being out for them, which is concerning. But we'll touch more on this matchup in the section on bookmaker info. Jack Doyle is also on injured reserve after he had to go to the hospital this past week. That puts Eric Ebron back into the role he had previously, though he did miss practice on Wednesday along with T.Y. Hilton due to a back injury. Brandon, how hard can you go at Eric Ebron at $5,600 knowing he will likely be crazy popular this week?
Yeah, he was like 11% owned when he was running 11 routes per game. Yeah. He's going to be at least, I'd say, 30% owned. I guess there is, we got Kelsey, we got George Kittle, we got Rob Gronkowski, but I think everyone's just going to play Eric Ebron, but it makes a lot of sense. He played 71% of the snaps last week. No Jack Doyle. I mean, I don't think I'll be overweight necessarily, right. But I'm not going to shy away from him because now actually the opportunity for him is there.
Right, and the thing that we hate about tight end is that nobody gets a steady workload and nobody has a good floor, but Ebron, in the games that Doyle missed, had 22% of the targets. He played one game with T.Y. Hilton without Jack Doyle. In that game, Ebron had 11 targets. So I think that his floor is actually good. So he'll be my cash game tight end this week. I can almost guarantee you that. And I agree with you where I probably will not be overweight in tournaments, but I will probably be largely in line with the field. And normally I try not to do that, but I think I'm pretty okay with it here personally. Sticking with that same game, the same team, Marlon Mack is in concussion protocol after sustaining a concussion in week 12. Nyheim Hines is $4,900. Brandon, how would you view Hines if Mack were to sit?
I would view him as enticing, but someone who I probably just wouldn't play very much. There are a lot of workhorse running backs on the slate, and we talk about it all the time. We're going to talk about it all throughout this podcast, but it's very hard to play someone who might play 40% of the snaps and just not really be a factor, even though he's pretty cheap, below 5,000. So I want to play him. I'll be enticed.
Yeah,
but I'm probably just not going to get too heavy on him.
Yeah, and the one game that Hines played with T.Y. Hilton while Marlon Mack was out and Jack Doyle was out, he had 5 targets. That's not a great number. He had more targets later on, but that was after T.Y. Hilton got hurt. So I don't view his passing game role as a whole as voluminous as it may have appeared initially. So I may have some, but it will probably just be sprinkles and nothing more for me. On the defensive side here, Jalen Ramsey mispracticed Wednesday, and head coach Doug Marrone said that there is a level of concern around Ramsey's availability for Sunday. We've seen T.Y. Hilton pop off the past 2 weeks, but Brandon, he is outdoors for this one. Are you into Hilton Sunday if Ramsey sits?
Yeah, I generally don't play T.Y. Hilton outdoors, but the Jaguars are just a mess right now. They'll be without Leonard Fournette as well. I don't really think that matters. If you look at the line, it doesn't really change anything either. But the Jaguars' defense has just been trending down quite a bit. So I could be fine with some Hilton at 7,600, but I wouldn't go overboard.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be a guy I'd prioritize because he's outdoors, because I think the spread is not large enough in this game, and I think that the Colts can probably get a lead and just – maybe they can if Mack sits, but I think he'd be on my radar, but he would not be someone I would, like, prioritize or build around for my tournament rosters. Not an injury here, but the Jaguars have benched Blake Bortles in favor of the greatest quarterback of his generation, Cody Kessler. Kessler will make his first start without left guard Andrew Norwell and running back Leonard Fournette. Norwell was placed on injured reserve on Monday, and Fournette was suspended for a fight in last week's game in Buffalo. Brandon, can you trust any Jaguars in this spot? You know, we got T.J. Yeldon and Carlos Hyde who are cheap and the receivers, but banged up offense, can you trust any of them against a largely non-threatening defense?
Trust, absolutely not. But T.J. Yeldon would be kind of in that similar range with Nyheim Hines. I mean, we've seen him play some heavy snaps, get a lot of targets just kind of on the full season, and it goes up a bit. Not a whole lot without Leonard Fournette, but I mean, I'm not overly enticed to play any Jaguars ever, and especially with their offensive line being what it is now.
Let's say that Mack does sit. Would you prefer T.J. Yeldon or Nyheim Hines?
I still think I prefer Yeldon.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Overall. I'm with you. I do think that the Colts will get out ahead in this game, and that definitely leads more toward T.J. Yeldon out of the backfield than Carlos Hyde.
I agree, and I would prefer Yeldon in both scenarios as well. Mitchell Trubisky did get in a limited practice Wednesday due to his shoulder issue that held him out on Thanksgiving, but Mike Garafolo of NFL Network is reporting that Chase Daniel will get the start this week. Daniel is $6,000 on the road, facing the Giants after scoring 18.9 FanDuel points on Thanksgiving. He's $6,000, Brandon. Is he tempting here, or does this push you more towards the Giants' defense?
I mean, he's a little tempting because Chicago has some viable weapons that he can just sort of throw to, and he looked pretty good on Thanksgiving.
He had some really bad throws, but like the output was still fine.
Yeah, I mean, he looked capable enough, but I think to answer your question, I'm a little bit more on the Giants defense because there aren't many cheap defenses I can go to, and they are only $3,300.
Yeah, they're $3,300, and we talk about Mitchell Trubisky's home road splits. I don't expect Chase Daniel to fix those home road splits. It could just be an overall offensive thing. And so they're going on the road facing not a great defense, but a better one than they faced last week. They're now outdoors. they're $3,300. I think they make a lot of sense. The Giants do. So, it pushes me more towards the Giants defense, but I will still have some limited Daniel lineups just because, again, like you said, the infrastructure around him is very good. And I think that that means quite a bit.
Is it,
go ahead.
Is it naked Chase Daniel for you? Because they have about five viable options to stack with him. And
but they're cheap. The thing with the pass catchers, like Taylor Gabriel's $5,300, and like everybody else in that tier has a floor that is just as bad as his. But I think if you assume that Daniel does well, then Gabriel's ceiling is high enough to use him. So I think I would go towards Taylor Gabriel if I were stacking with him.
Yeah, I mean, Gabriel kind of has like the best combined workload.
I think even Allen Robinson does just because his deep work is better. Since he came back in the three games, he's gotten multiple, I think like three deep targets in each game. But he's more expensive, and that's what kind of worries me.
The Giants are very good against the passes this year, for whatever that's worth to you.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. I think that the price is the main thing that pushes me off of Robinson. So I can use Daniel for sure because he saves me some salary. I can use Gabriel. I'll probably have more than one Allen Robinson share, but
yeah,
I think that's probably where I wind up most.
Yeah, I could see that. Robinson has 4, 3, and 3 deep targets in his past three games,
which I will take. Both Sam Darnold and Josh McCown were limited in practice on Wednesday. Darnold says that he hopes to play this weekend. Outside of that Miami game where Spencer Long was banged up and just snapping all over the place, we have not seen Darnold play with both Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson healthy since week 5. Now, Anderson did miss practice on Wednesday, but he played last week, so he should be good to go. Let's assume, Brandon, that Darnold does play. Is anybody in the Jets offense tempting to you against the Titans?
Nope.
Nope?
No. There are 26 teams on the main slate.
And
the Jets are probably a bottom three offense.
Bottom three?
Okay, so I guess Oakland, Arizona. Yep, although yep. Arizona at least has some. I don't know. I mean, I could maybe say bottom three. Bottom five for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. I would like
49ers, but
I would like Quincy Enunwa. He is $5,200. And in the three-game sample I mentioned before where it was Cleveland, Jacksonville, Denver. Those were the three games where Enunwa, Curse, and Anderson were all healthy and active. In those three games, Enunwa had 24 or 25% of the team's targets. He had 8 targets in 2 of those games, topped 50 yards twice. For $5,200, I can get behind that. He actually had some deep targets too. So
he's been running a lot of routes as well.
What's that?
He's been running a lot of routes as well.
And I think, like, he's also just a good player. We haven't seen that because the entire offense has been deceased, basically. But, you know, they've moved Long over to left guard. That should help the offense. Maybe Darnold coming back helps, too. So I would be on Enunwa if Darnold does play. I think
that's sure. I'm always looking for cheap wide receivers, so I guess I could get there. But nobody else for me.
He's also hashtag good, which does not hurt. Marvin Jones hitting the shelf due to a knee injury that has held him out the past 2 weeks. Without Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay has more than 30% of the team's targets over the past three games, but looks like the Rams may get cornerback Aqib Talib back. He was activated from injured reserve on Monday and practiced fully on Wednesday. Let's assume that Talib does play, Brandon. Does he scare you off of Galladay at all at $7,300?
Not enough because Detroit has, I mean, they're going to get blown out in this game almost assuredly, and they have nobody else to throw the ball to other than, I guess, Bruce Ellington.
And like, I'm not going to downgrade a receiver because he's facing a cornerback who has missed 2 months. Like, I don't need to do that.
Kenny Galladay is very good.
He's very good. That's also the weird thing. And like, you can say he's going to face double teams, but like, what have teams been doing the past 2 weeks when he's still gotten 30% of the targets? So he's a good play at $7,300. He's a cash game play to me. I think I don't think I'll get there at wide receiver, but if I wound up in that range, he would stick out to me for sure. Same range as Robert Woods, and I'd have a tough choice there, but I do like Galladay for sure. Gus Edwards missed practice on Wednesday due to an ankle injury. Alex Collins was able to get in a limited practice with his foot injury, so the Ravens' backfield is pretty much a hot mess right now. Kenneth Dixon he's been practicing the past couple of weeks. He could be activated from injured reserve as well. We'll talk more about them in the trend section, but just when we thought we had this backfield figured out. Just kidding, guys. The Patriots activated Rex Burkhead off of injured reserve on Monday. He's been out since week three, which is roughly when Sony Michel started to rise. Does Burkhead's return push you off, Brandon, of either Michel or James White?
Not really, because Burkhead wasn't like the biggest factor early on in the year. But I guess it'd just be classic Patriots for them to run him out there for like 60% of the snaps this week.
I seriously doubt that'll happen.
Right. So I'm going to say no. I'm not really changing how I view this offense as a whole. And I'm a little bit worried about the offense, and I'll talk about that later on.
I think that's fair, given how well the Vikings defense has played. Devin Funchess remained sidelined in practice on Wednesday, making it seem like he will miss the second consecutive game. Curtis Samuel also missed due to a hamstring injury. We'll talk more about the Panthers in the trends discussion. Before we take a look at those trends, though, got to let you know this week's Number Fire Podcast Network free play URL. In the past week, RAWRDO won 3 months of Number Fire Premium, in large part thanks to Christian McCaffrey. They paired him with Saquon Barkley and Juju Smith-Schuster to get the win. In addition to the Number Fire Premium, they also won a ton of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. You are getting free entries on FanDuel if you enter yourself into this contest. If you want to try your hot hand this week, here is your URL for week 13. It's FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. That's FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. Again, FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. I'm checking the URL right now to make sure it is up, and we are good to go. So go to FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire to get yourself entered for a chance to win Number Fire Premium and FanDuel points. Let's take a look at our trends discussion for week number 13. Brandon, starting off with that Patriots-Vikings game. Should be a pretty fun one. It's an afternoon game. I am excited about that. You're starting your first trend here talking about the Vikings side and what Kirk Cousins has done against decent defenses this year.
Yeah, I mean, splits are really weird. They're really hard in football. It's a 16-game sample. Especially, like if you're looking in season, it's just hard to kind of break things down. I mean, if you look at home splits, you have to figure out who they played. Same with road splits. So it's kind of difficult. But yeah, I'm going to focus mostly Kirk Cousins against top 20 pass defenses and defenses measured by Number Fire's adjusted metrics. So I'm just going to do what I can, and I think it's still pretty telling overall. Because on the full season, Kirk Cousins has already been just kind of league average with 0.14 passing net expected points per dropback. So just expected points added on a per dropback basis. The league average is 0.12. Again, Cousins just above that at 0.14. His success rate, so the rate of dropbacks that increase expected scoring, is 52.8, just above league average of 51.6%. Now, he's played 7 of his 11 games against top 20 pass defenses. New England is 18th, according to Number Fire's metrics. So, you know, not great. This is not an elite pass defense by any means, but it's solid enough to be considered somewhat league average. Now, in those 7 games against top 20 pass defenses, Cousins has posted just 12 touchdowns to 5 interceptions for 0.06 passing net expected points per dropback, so about half of the league average. And a below-average success rate, close to average, but 50.8%. In terms of yards per attempt, 6.98, below league average of about 7.5. So hasn't been great when he's been tested. Now, the Patriots have given up an average of 24.1 fantasy points per game to quarterbacks over their past 7. If you remove a game from Derek Anderson, they kind of got beaten up on the ground in a few of those, especially by Mitchell Trubisky, but only 2 of those passers posted above average yards per attempt marks in those games, and the Patriots are 11th in passing net expected points per dropback allowed in that split. So they kind of haven't been as bad as the fantasy totals have suggested. Of course, we know that the Patriots lack a strong pass rush, and Cousins has thrown 17 touchdowns to 2 interceptions from a clean pocket while ranking sixth in adjusted completion rate, according to Pro Football Focus. The Vikings are 5.5-point road underdogs here with an implied total of just 21.5 points, which actually ranks just 18th among 26 teams on the main slate. But, you know, outside of one dud against the Jets, Cousins has been okay recently, averaging 20.8 fantasy points in his past six. He always has strong stacking partners. It's $7,600 on the road. Cousins, not fully on my radar. I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out how to view and value Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs, and Adam Thielen. So, Jim, am I overthinking this one because he's just been producing and the Patriots can't generate pressure? Or what are your thoughts here on Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I think that the main thing that I take away from all this is the Patriots' lack of a pass rush. Because if you think about this Vikings defense, they're strong at wide receiver. They have a plotter at tight end who can occasionally accidentally catch footballs. They're healthy at running back again. Their one weakness is their tackles. And that doesn't matter as much against the Patriots. And if you look at the games where Cousins has struggled, he struggled against Detroit. That game was the one where they did not have Stephon Diggs. And they can also get after the passer a bit. He struggled against Philadelphia. That was before Derek Barnett went down. They can get after the passer a bit. Buffalo has some talent on their defensive line. Those are the three worst games Cousins has had this year. Outside of that, he has scored 17.5 or more FanDuel points in every game. So I think in games where Cousins can remain upright and, you know, get rid of the football, he's looked good this year. So I think, to me personally, I don't like him as much on the road as I do at home. And the Patriots defense is one of those teams that I bump up a bit when they are at home compared to on the road. But I don't think I have to avoid them, especially with Cousins and the good infrastructure around him. Now, Stephon Diggs did miss practice Wednesday. Thielen was limited, so it's something to keep an eye on. But assuming both those guys get in full practices by Friday, I kind of think that Cousins has really good upside for this slate. So I think I'm higher on Cousins than you. My one problem is I don't know who's best to stack him with, because the Patriots have this reputation for shutting down the opposing team's top option. I don't know who the Vikings' top option is. And if he shuts down, if they try to shut down both Thielen and Diggs, I don't want to use Kyle Rudolph. I'm not going to use Laquan Treadwell. Aldrick Robinson doesn't play enough snaps. So I think that's my big concern. I'm probably still going to use Thielen, but I think I'm higher on this offense in general than you are.
Yeah, it sounds like it. They're probably going to use Stephon Gilmore to shadow Stephon Diggs. They've been shadowing quite a bit. So that's a bit problematic. And according to Rich Rebar, the Patriots do give up a lot of production out of the slot. So that would lead me more toward Adam Thielen than Stephon Diggs. But, you know, it's an interesting game because there are two offenses with a lot of weapons. And yeah, so I want to discuss it more and kind of figure it out. And so, yeah, I think you talked me into some more Kirk Cousins and Adam Thielen and even Stephon Diggs than I probably would have had otherwise.
I think it's a good game to stack, too, because in Week 13, there are teams that have given up, but both these teams have a lot of motivation to play hard. I think that's kind of why the Carolina-Seattle game last week wound up being pretty high scoring, is that both teams have motivation, and that's the case for this one, too. And I think that's going to make me stack this game a little bit more than I would in general. We'll talk more about this game in just a second. But first, let's talk about the Rams back on the main slate here for the first time since Cooper Kupp's unfortunate season-ending knee injury. And they're in a really great spot in a dome against the Lions. We just have to figure out the best way for getting access to their offense. We've got three games of data to look at with this offense without Kupp, and it does narrow the target tree a bit. The biggest benefactor seems to be Brandon Cooks. His overall target share increases 2 percentage points, but he gets 46% of the deep targets when Kupp is out. Robert Woods gets 39% of the deep targets without Kupp, up from 33% overall. So if Goff goes deep, it's basically going to be either Cooper or either Robert Woods or Brandon Cooks, and those are awesome numbers, and I love that. Woods is lined up in the slot on 63% of his snaps in those games, meaning he should be better able to avoid Darius Slay. He's $7,300 while Cooks is $7,800. I love Cooks on turf, and I am going to use him, but I might rank Woods a tiny bit higher due to where he lines up when Kupp is out. Josh Reynolds has had two good games and one dud in this sample. Without Kupp, his overall role is reflective of that with 14% of the targets and just one deep look, but he does have 26% of the red zone targets, and that carries more weight in this offense than it does in others. He's in play at $5,800, but he could flop if he doesn't find the end zone here. Todd Gurley was limited in their last game. He had that ankle injury pretty quickly, so he got to three targets in a game where they threw a bunch, but now he should be rested. He practiced in full on Wednesday, and in the first two games that Kupp missed, Gurley had 21% of the team's targets. It's a really good number for a running back. His price is back down to $9,800, which is the first time it has been below $10,000 since week six. I want to use him in cash. I want to make sure I can afford him. It's kind of hard to build lineups around him in cash right now, but I think I can. And he is my favorite Ram for tournaments as well. For the tight ends, neither guy gets more than 9% of the overall targets. Gerald Everett does have 16% of the red zone targets in this time. Even though his snap rate is lower, I would likely rank him above Tyler Higbee if I were going here, but I'm more inclined to avoid both of them. So for me, the ranking in tournaments is Gurley, Woods, and Cooks when you account for the price, followed by Reynolds. I think he's a tier below these guys, though. Where do you sit on these Rams against the Lions, Brandon?
I love all of them. I love Jared Goff, even at 8,400 and on the road. I love Todd Gurley. I'm really trying to fit him into the majority of my lineups this week, even though, you know, he's $900 more than the second most expensive running back, who is Kareem Hunt this week. Robert Woods has been so good. He's had at least 9.5 fantasy points in every game since week two. I guess if I had to rank them, it's going to be Gurley, Woods, Cooks, Reynolds. So I guess same issue.
Yeah. Any interest in either of the tight ends, or are we good at avoiding that?
Yeah, I'm not gonna go there.
I don't think you have to. They are 100 cheaper than Cam Brate, and I feel better at Brate's role than theirs. So I'd probably just go there if I were paying down there at tight end. Let's finish up discussing the Vikings and the Patriots here, Brandon, by talking about the other side of this matchup. And the Vikings defense is very different now than it was earlier in the year. And I think that they're a good example of why full season stats suck at this point of the year for fantasy football. And you're looking at their defense basically since Everson Griffin returned to them back in week eight.
Yeah, that's the cutoff that I provided since week eight. So this is a defense that entered the year being like very feared, and then things got pretty rough. But now things are back to the point where we need to take note. Everson Griffin, as you mentioned, returned in week eight. Since then, passers against them have posted a passing net expected points per dropback mark of -0.14, lowest in the league. And just one other team is better than -0.07. So they're way out there with just one other team at being very stingy against quarterbacks. And they've also led up a league low 40.7% passing success rate in that split. They are second in sack rate in that split. And, you know, even if you factor out expected points lost on sacks, they still have the best pass defense in this span. And if we look at traditional stats, it's 6.05 yards per attempt, which is second lowest. Four touchdowns, seven picks. They've just been very good. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of past playing Tom Brady in DFS at this point. Even at 7,900, I'm not overly tempted to go there because he has just once gotten past 23 fantasy points all season. But this kind of worries me for the Patriots' assets. And the Patriots are a team where nobody has an elite market share, so you need volume and efficiency for everyone to kind of get his. And without that guarantee, it's a bit problematic for me. Rob Gronkowski, though, is back and looks pretty healthy. He is 6,700 this week. He ran 27 of 31 routes a week ago, 87.1%, which is kind of in line with his early season rates, just a tick below. That just means that he's blocked less and he's been running, or he ran more routes last week, similar to what he did early on in the season. The Vikings, though, they've let nine receivers only get to double-digit fantasy points all season, fewer than all but one team. If you look at kind of just season-long finishes, they've led up just four top 24 weeks. So it's really capping the upside of receivers that they've faced. So I'm scared of Julian Edelman and Josh Gordon, especially with Rob Gronkowski back. So, Jim, where do you stand with the Patriots this week? Looking at the backfield, looking at, you know, Tom Brady and these pass catchers.
I'm not super tempted by the backfield personally because it's not a, you know, nobody's a workhorse there. And that kind of pushes me away in a spot where I don't necessarily love the matchup. I think I might be higher on Brady than you. Not a ton because I respect this Vikings defense a lot. But the thing that I'm looking at here is that this Patriots offense is also much healthier than it's been all season long because not only did they get Sony Michel, Rex Burkhead, and Rob Gronkowski back, but last week was their first game with all five week one starters on the offensive line since week six. And, you know, you mentioned Gronk blocking more. He was blocking a lot because they had injuries at tackle. Adrian Waddle had to start a couple of games at right tackle for Marcus Cannon, and that's not really optimal for this offense. So I kind of think they're just healthier, and I think a healthy Tom Brady with a healthy offense that includes Josh Gordon, Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, James White, Sony Michel, yada, 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 and a healthy offensive line, I think they can move the ball even against a good defense. I have not used Brady much this year. I think probably the Patriot or the Titans game where they flopped is the one time I have. But he's kind of tempting just because of the game environment here and how much this game means to both sides. I think Edelman is intriguing. He is $7,300. He has scored 14 or more points in four straight games and five of his past six. $7,300, the Vikings' weakness, I think, outside of the linebackers is in the slot, so I could use him. My favorite guy, though, in this entire offense will be Gronk. At $6,700, you mentioned the routes. The offensive line being healthy allows him to run more routes. He looked good, like just watching him last week, so I don't want to go overboard on Gronk, and he's not a cash game play. But I think at $6,700, he is a mighty fine tournament option.
Yeah, I love Gronk quite a bit. He's not cheap, of course, but he's a little bit underpriced potentially at $6,700. His price actually did go down. I don't think I can get to Josh Gordon, though, outside of maybe some full-on game stacks. But yeah, I've played a lot of Julian Edelman over the past few weeks since he's been healthy. His role has been fantastic. I just do worry still about kind of the overall upside of what the Vikings have let up. So it sounds like you're higher on this game overall than yes. I am, and that's kind of why.
That's the broad takeaway is that I'm higher on the game in total.
Yeah.
Are you going to stack it?
Oh, yeah. I'll stack. I mean, I do a lot of weird stuff. I'll stack almost any game. I'll find a way to stack like Buffalo and Miami or something. But good. Yeah, I'll definitely stack this game. It's just it's not the first place I'm looking. And I needed to figure out if I was too low. And it sounds like I might be too low on this game.
I don't know if you're too low. I think it's just that I like this game and I like what it means. So I think that's probably the one deviation. Let's move on here to my second trend, which is kind of a broader one. Now, there are a couple of running backs this week who are intriguing for DFS, but don't get a lot of work in the passing game. We have to decide whether we can accept that or not. A way to potentially answer this is by looking at perfect lineup data and the running backs who have made the cut so far this year. We got 12 weeks of data to look at and 32 total running backs for this season since the addition of the flex spot. So a sample of 32 backs who have been in a perfect FanDuel lineup for this year. Those 32 running backs are averaging 4.6 receptions for 49.6 yards and 0.59 receiving touchdowns per game. That is a hair higher than last year, but largely in line with what we saw in 2017 as well, where these guys are getting work in the passing game if they're making the perfect lineup. Four running backs have had at least 100 receiving yards, eight had 70 or more, and 13 had at least 50 receiving yards. So 13 of 32 backs had at least 50 receiving yards. On the lower end, things are pretty grim. Adrian Peterson is the only player to make a perfect lineup without recording a single catch. He had 120 yards rushing and two touchdowns in that game. So a huge day on the ground. The only other two players who have made a perfect lineup without multiple catches There are only two guys who have made the perfect lineup without multiple catches outside of Peterson. One was Kareem Hunt, who had one catch, but he took it 50 yards for a touchdown. The other was Isaiah Crowell, who had 219 yards on the ground and a touchdown against Denver. So basically what we're saying here is you need to go off from a rushing perspective if you want to make a perfect lineup without production in the passing game. That doesn't happen very often. Like, we're not seeing a bunch of guys go for 219 yards each week. So to me, this makes me wary of guys like Gus Edwards, who is on the road in Atlanta. And, you know, if he's healthy, I think that there's some concern there. I think he has one more target than I do this year. Chris Carson doesn't get a lot of work in the passing game. He is $6,300 as a big home favorite. In theory, these guys are in good spots this week. But Brandon, I am hesitant to trust them because of their lack of work in the passing game. Where do you sit on these guys entering week 13?
Edwards and Carson specifically?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, from an NFL DFS standpoint, there's really no worse feeling than knowing that your players are not on the field. And that can happen with running backs who are not workhorses. It can happen with wide receivers who are potentially on the field but just not getting targets, whether that's, you know, an Odell Beckham or, you know, a punt play that you have a wide receiver. Kind of the only way that you can avoid this, of course, is a quarterback or paying up for running backs who play virtually every snap, who don't get taken out if the team is trailing, mm-hmm. who don't get taken out near the goal line. And it's always enticing. That's kind of the word that I've been saying with like Nyheim Hines and TJ Yeldon. It's enticing, sure, to play, you know, a running back who could, you know, play 70% of the snaps and handle 20 touches maybe for below 5,000, or even, you know, Edwards and Carson in like that mid 6,000 range. But if they fall behind, there's no guarantee that they're going to play. And that is very problematic. And it takes away both floor and ceiling. One of the ways that Christian McCaffrey scored 30 plus points in three of his past four games is because he plays every snap. So he's out there. And so, with Edwards and Carson, I mean, Carson specifically is in a better spot because he's a home favorite. Edwards is a slim road favorite, but without that passing work, with the ability to just be taken out of a game entirely, I really have changed my process. And if I'm looking in that range, I'm much more inclined to look at someone like a Matt Breida, who still won't play a full allotment of snaps, but who will get a lot of targets.
I also think Lamar Miller is interesting in that tier. He's 63, and he sometimes gets work in the passing game, which is more than I can say about Edwards. Like, I think that Edwards' game last week is a good example of why this is a concern, the lack of passing game involvement. He had a good game. He ran 23 times for a .118. That is an objectively good game, but he still had 11.8 FanDuel points because he didn't score. He didn't get a target. And Melvin Gordon, like, he hasn't scored fewer than 15 points all year. So, like, even Gus Edwards' good game is not on par with those guys. And he's $1,200 cheaper than Aaron Jones, who gets passing game involvement. Philip Lindsay can get passing game involvement. He's $7,000. I think I'm just inclined to avoid these guys. I agree with you that I prefer Carson over Gus Edwards, but it's really hard for me to justify. And it's the same thing you said. It's a change in my process from past years. I need passing game involvement. If you're not going to give it to me, you're not going to be in my roster. So I think that's where I sit.
So two guys who are, three players who are 6,200 exactly. That's Tevin Coleman at home against Baltimore. It's not a great matchup, but he can definitely see targets. Kenyon Drake. I don't know if he still leads Miami in targets, but he might. He's 6,200. And then Dalvin Cook. I mean, he's had, I think, 4, 3, and 3 targets. So it's something. Do you prefer those three or any of those three to Chris Carson or Gus Edwards this week?
My favorite guy in that tier is Tariq Cohen. He is $6,100. And we saw last week that his passing involvement spiked back up. He had 7 or 8 targets in that one. And it seemed like he had a good rapport with Chase Daniel. So I think I might rank Cohen highest because I think that I can best predict his role. But Dalvin Cook at 62, I hated his snap rate last week. It was $5,500 and honestly the ideal game script for him. But Latavius Murray is not going to be on the field if they're down. So I think I would rank them Cohen, Cook, and then hard pass. maybe not a hard pass on Tevin, but harder for me to trust him, I guess.
Yeah. It's just, you know, none of these guys are going to play. Maybe Chris Carson, if they do get out ahead and just kind of lean on him. Really, none of these guys is going to crack like a 60% snap rate other than Lamar Miller.
I mean, Dalvin did play 88% 2 weeks ago.
He did.
In neutral script, but then it went down, and that really bothered me.
Yeah, I still like Dalvin a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's actually someone I'll probably call a love this week just because of his talent, and that game and that overall plays. Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's without that passing work, you're going to get some Gus Edwards games. You're going to get some, Adrian Peterson games, you know, 91 total yards, no touchdowns.
We don't need to bring that name up here. Let's just move on and talk about a game that's also kind of intriguing this week. That's the Broncos and the Bengals. And Brandon, you're looking at Case Keenum here and his passing efficiency and where he's been throwing the football. I think that part specifically since the DT trade. So what he's seeing here is they face a Bengals defense that is just abysmal right now.
Oh, no, don't get it wrong. I'm still looking at Case Keenum. He's 6,900 this week. And, you know, I want to spend up for running back, so I have to look to spend down at quarterback and receiver. Daniel,
Cody Kessler, Jeff Driscoll. Just saying, man.
I do like Driscoll. And yeah, I mean, Keenum's 69, but like, there are some other options at like 75. And sure, it's $600,000,
Brandon. Don't forget Marcus. We'll talk about him later.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if that quarterback's first and last name both start with M.
Yeah, Marcus Mariota, he's back.
Okay, so Denver Denver travels to face the Bengals defense. Cincinnati's 21st in adjusted pass defense on the full season, but 32nd in passing net expected points per drop back. Since week six, it's not even really been that close. They've just been horrible. Keenum has also been pretty horrible himself on the full season, 0.04 passing net expected points per dropback, so about a third of the league average on a per dropback basis. Success rate of just 44.7%, 7.14 yards per attempt, so not too far off the league average, but still just a below average passer. However, just one of his games has been against an adjusted pass defense currently ranked outside the top 20. And the Broncos are 18th in adjusted pass efficiency based on number fires metrics. So, you know, when you account for opponent, it's not all that bad. So that leads me first to Emmanuel Sanders as a potential, not even necessarily stacking partner, but just a one-off play. He is 7,000 this week. He has a 27.2% target share and 42.3% of the air yards since the Demaryius Thomas trade 3 games ago. He's certainly got the easiest case to make for him. He's got volume in his favor against a really generous pass defense. Then there is Cortland Sutton at 5,400. He has just 5 targets per game, a 16.3% target share in the 3 post-Demaryius Thomas games, but his average depth of target is 13.3 yards. He's facing a defense that has 25th in deep ball efficiency, after facing some very good deep ball defenses the past few weeks. Then there's tight end Matt Lacoste at 4,700. He takes over for Jeff Heirman, who led the team at red zone targets. Lacoste, pretty athletic. He was targeted 4 times on just 12 routes last week, caught 3 of those 4 for 34 yards and a touchdown. Cincinnati's just 28th in fantasy points allowed per target to tight ends. So I kind of like all 3 of these guys for different reasons. I'm also not above playing some Case Keenum at 6,900. So, Jim, you know, I guess first and most important, where does Sanders land for you this week? But also, can you talk yourself into any Case Keenum, Cortland Sutton, or Matt Lacoste?
I love Manny. I think he's in the same discussion as Kenny Galladay, where if I had the money for him in cash games, he would be perfect. And I love him from that perspective. I just don't think I'll get there because I'm trying to jam in 3 mid to high price running backs. That's pretty hard if you need to get into that mid range at wide receiver too. So if I get there, I would go Manny for sure. I think he's awesome. He's a great tournament play. So all in on Manny for sure. Love those market shares. Having a harder time with Sutton, Lacoste, and Keenum. I think my biggest draw away from Keenum is that, like, he hasn't really shown any upside this year, and Marcus Mariota has been a more consistent scorer. He is at home. He is also facing a pretty poor pass defense, and he is $100 more than Keenum. So I'm having a hard time talking myself into Keenum. I think the matchup's there. I agree that the matchup is great, and I think this game could be kind of high scoring, but it's really hard for me to not go there. What about Philip Lindsay? He is $7,000. I loved what I saw from his role last week with a season-high snap rate despite Royce Freeman being active. What are your thoughts on Philip Lindsay?
Yeah, no targets for Lindsay last week, but he had 5, 3, and 3 the 3 weeks prior to that.
The five-target game was with Royce Freeman active too.
Yes, and I love Royce Freeman, but I love Philip Lindsay now. I'm a believer in Lindsay enough that I changed my tune, and he's definitely the guy that they should be featuring right now. Mm-hmm. At 7,000, I have no problems with Philip Lindsay. I just don't think that necessarily I'm going to prioritize him, especially, again, it's a big jump, but Aaron Jones is $7,600. Right. $600 goes a long way this week, but I still think that Aaron Jones is in a tier or even two above Lindsay, although I do love me some Philip Lindsay this week.
Totally agree. And that's why I think that if I'm going cash games, it's Jones over Lindsay every time, even with the price discrepancy being what it is. But I think for tournaments, Lindsay does make a really good amount of sense. So I'm going to be on Lindsay. I think it's hard to decide. I don't know if I'll have more Lindsay or more Manny, but I think I'll have enough of both for sure. But having a really hard time talking myself into Case Keenum. We'll talk about Mariota in my fourth trend. I know. I'm sorry.
He hasn't had the
Brokeback Mountain gif where I wish I knew how to quit you. That's me to Marcus Mariota. But like, I just can't.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's just, for me, it's mostly that the matchup's so good and that Keenum, while not having much upside, hasn't played. He played the Raiders once, and they're 32nd in pass defense, but every other team's been at least top 20, and now he's getting basically the league's worst pass defense over the past half of the season.
Do you want to do a Mariota versus Keenum bet?
Nope.
What?
No.
Why?
I'm not saying I would rather have Marcus Mariota.
We'll get on to him in a second. Let's talk first, though, about Cam Newton, because we often talk in DFS about being wary of teams facing divisional opponents for a second time, and there is data to back that up. This is a legit thing, and I do account for it usually. We do have that this week in a game between the Panthers and the Bucs, which has the highest total on the board at 55 points. When I looked into this a few years ago, it showed that efficient quarterbacks see a bigger dip facing a divisional foe for a second time, and Cam's fantasy value does not come from efficiency, so I wanted to dig back and see how he specifically does in these spots facing a divisional team for the second time. Now, this is the first time in 2018 Cam has faced a divisional team for the second time, so I looked at the 4 years from 2014 to 2017 to see how he did in these scenarios. I looked at just the situations in which he faced a team twice in that same season, putting the sample at 10 games for both the first and second matchup of the year. For Cam, specifically, again, from 2014 to 2017, his fantasy output actually went up the second time facing a divisional team. He averaged 21.61 FanDuel points per game the second time. That's compared to 19.16 in the first one, so an increase of about 2.5 points on FanDuel. And this wasn't something super fluky with small samples either. He actually averaged more passing touchdowns, fewer interceptions, more rushing yards, and more rushing touchdowns per game in the second half of that sample. But Cam has also been a bit of a different passer this year. His adjusted yards per attempt is the highest of his career outside of his 2015 MVP season. That can make a difference because, again, efficient quarterbacks suffer more the second time facing a divisional foe. Cam was a monster that year. In 2015, he was efficient. He scored 32 or more FanDuel points in two of his 3 second games in division, so didn't bother him there. He averaged 28 points the second time facing a team compared to 23 points in the first meeting. So, no concerns there. When facing the Bucs in Carolina this year, Cam threw for 247 yards on just 25 attempts, finishing with 21.2 FanDuel points. I feel pretty good about him here, even though he is the second most expensive quarterback on the slate behind Patrick Mahomes, and I'm willing to pay up to get him. I think I also feel really good about DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey, especially knowing that Newton does not struggle facing a team for the second time. So, Brandon, despite this narrative and a narrative I buy into in general, I'm still buying into Newton and this entire Panthers passing offense What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to do it. But I do just kind of have to make a note where I'm trying to be nitpicky because there's 26 starting quarterbacks this week. He's not inexpensive by any means, but this year the Bucs at home have given up passing net expected points per dropback mark of 0.04. So basically Case Keenum passing success rate of 47.7%. So below league average. So they've actually been a pretty solid home defense without accounting for who they played. On the road, though, is where they've been terrible with 0.57 passing net expected points per dropback, a success rate of 61.8%. So it has kind of been something at least to take note of with how good they've been at home. I mean, they've played Nick Foles, Ben Roethlisberger, Baker Mayfield, Alex Smith, and Nick Mullins, so keep that in mind. But, you know, if we're trying to nitpick, which I think we have to, mm-hmm. keep that in mind, especially when we're looking at this efficiency and the fact that they've already played the Panthers. But I still don't think I'm going to talk myself out of Cam Newton, especially not DJ Moore. So,
I mean, Nick Foles had 332 yards passing against him. Ben had 353. Baker, it wasn't great efficiency, but, like, he had 215 and two touchdowns. Alex Smith had the Walking Dead as his offensive line. Nick Mullins was playing without Marquise Goodwin. So I do value home road splits in general, and I think that they are a better team at home, but I don't think they're one I need to avoid, especially with someone as good as Cam and as good of an offense as he has around him. So I think I'm probably higher on Cam than you. Maybe I'm just higher at every quarterback outside of Case Keenum.
I think you're just more optimistic about
maybe
life.
That's why general. I didn't like Keenum, is I'm higher on other quarterbacks this week. I can see that being the case.
Not, I mean, it's like I'm not worried about Cam Newton necessarily. Right. I just figured I would throw it out there. And I mean, sure, Nick Foles had 332, but he had one touchdown. Took him 48 attempts to get there. Not a good.
I left that part out, Brandon, because it didn't fit my point.
43% success rate. You know.
Yeah. You say tomato, I say Nick Foles sucks. So let's move on to the fourth trends here and talk about a game that I think is actually pretty interesting. It's the Ravens taking on the Falcons. This game has a 49-point total and just a 1-point spread. Brandon, your fourth trend is looking at this Ravens pass defense. And I want to hear your thoughts here because I'm trying to figure out how I want to attack this game, and this could help me decide. So what do you see with this matchup here?
Yeah, so, you know, I might be lower on Cam Newton against the Buccaneers than you, but I might be way higher on Matt Ryan against the Ravens.
I love Matt Ryan at home, so
I make weird decisions.
I don't know if I'd speak too soon on that one.
Okay, so the Ravens travel to face the Falcons, very elite pass offense, especially when they play at home. So I think we need to dig into this one and not write it off entirely because the defense looks too good, or, you know, just overlook a potentially bad matchup. So I'm looking specifically at the Ravens since week 6. Overall, on the season, though, the Ravens are third in adjusted pass defense based on number of fires metrics. So I just want to throw that out there. They've been very good on the full season. But since week 5, they have not recorded a single interception. Since then, they have limited passers to 6.52 yards per attempt, the sixth lowest, and a 45.2% passing success rate, ninth lowest. But they've let up 0.14 passing net expected points per dropback. So, you know, just above league average, 16th. In part because they're just league average in sack rate in that span. So, you know, not a pushover matchup, but certainly not playing as if they are the third best pass defense in football. It's a 13-game slate, so, it's pretty safe to say, especially at quarterback, that few options will be very popular. We never really see that with quarterbacks, and as the slates grow, that just becomes more the case. But, you know, we do know that some of Atlanta's assets have slate-changing upside, and that starts with Matt Ryan at 8,500. He is the third most expensive quarterback on the main slate. Against top-half defenses this season, Ryan has still been a tick above league average in passing net expected points per dropback, 7.75 yards per attempt, so above league average there. Of course, at home, he's been elite, 0.47. passing net expected points per dropback, so almost four times the league average, 61.6% success rate, 9.67 yards per attempt, more than 2 full yards above league average on a per attempt basis. But the average pass defense that he's faced at home is ranked about 23rd. It's 23rd.2. Now, Baltimore is tops in target success rate allowed to receivers, but Julio Jones has been so good He's got a 26% target share in four post-buy games, 57% of the deep targets. He's got at least 96 yards in all but two games, at least 107 yards in six straight. Though since week six, Baltimore is still third in target success rate allowed to wide receivers. And overall in the full season, just one receiver has gotten even to 91 yards or 20 fantasy points against them. So they've done well to limit breakout games, but that's what Julio Jones just does. Calvin Ridley at 6,400 to me is overpriced. He's got an 18.3% target share in four post-buy games, pretty uneven in those 9, 5, 4, and 13 targets. Played 74% of the snaps last week behind Mohamed Sanu. Saw his first red zone work since week four last week. So I'm not really overly into this offense as a whole, but I do like Matt Ryan and I do like Julio Jones as tournament options. So I guess it's kind of a larger picture question here, but you know, do you think there's any merit to thinking outside the box on such a big slate, or is it just kind of dispersed enough that you don't feel like you have to take a big risk, such as, you know, rostering too many Matt Ryan, Julio Jones stacks against a very good pass defense?
Yeah, I think that in general, not just on big slates, but I think in general, there is always merit to thinking outside the box when there is a legitimate reason for doing so. And I think when you have the Falcons at home in a dome, there is always a legitimate reason for doing so, given how good their offense is when they get to play indoors. So I think that this one does make sense. I think that Matt Ryan makes sense. That does not mean I will have him on my roster. It's just because I love Cam. He's 87. Jared Goff's 84. I like him. I'm higher on Tom Brady than you are at 79. And then you get down to the cheaper quarterback. So I think, although I like Ryan, and I think if you like Ryan, you should use him, I don't think I personally will. But Julio is 86. He's at home, and is anybody going to use Julio against the Ravens? I really doubt it.
Probably not.
Yeah, so like, I think Julio makes a lot of sense. I think Julio is probably the one guy I'll wind up using here. Maybe I could talk myself into some Austin Hooper at 57 because he's a cheap tight end who is at home with a decent implied team total. But well, I think that's probably where I stop.
Julio's got some buzz on fanshare.sports.com. So
is it all positive or no?
Yeah.
It is? That's upsetting. I don't think people will use him, but
I don't either.
Hopefully not, at least. I think, like, among the high-priced receivers, Julio might be my favorite?
Nah.
Who do you have above him?
Tyreek Hill.
You have Tyreek Hill above him?
Yeah.
When have you ever ranked Tyreek Hill above anybody?
Never.
This is easily a first.
Oakland's very bad against deep balls.
We're going to talk more about this in the bookmaker section because I'm baffled right now. But okay. we'll get back to that.
I probably do prefer him straight up.
I'm just surprised it's Tyreek Hill and not like Nuke.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that later on. I do too. Let's finish up here in the trends discussion with Marcus Mariota, because I want to punish all of you by listening to me talk about Mariota again. Now, Mariota did burn the living daylights out of me 2 weeks ago. He got a stinger against the Colts, left at halftime, got just 4.1 points when I used him in cash. That was awesome. But Mariota looked healthy again on Monday against the Texans. He completed 22 of his 23 passes. I think I might be on him again here against the Jets. If we look at the larger sample here, Mariota really started to look healthy again in the London game against the Chargers 5 games ago. In those 5 games, he does have the one dud where he left at halftime, but outside of that, he has scored 16 or more points in every game, and he has scored 21.8 or more FanDuel points in 3 of these 5, and 3 of 4 since the break. The one game he didn't was that stinger game. He also showed how high his ceiling is earlier this year by scoring 31.4 points at home against the Eagles. He's at home again here. And the Eagles' defense is not great, as we now know, but they were better then, and the Jets' defense isn't great either. They ranked 20th against the pass, according to NumberFire's metrics. Tom Brady had more expected points against them last week than he has had in a game all season long, and that game was in New Jersey. This one is in Nashville. The Jets are also ranked 24th in adjusted sack rate, according to Football Outsiders, meaning Mariota shouldn't have to deal with the sacks that have held him back so much this year. Even including the sacks and the Indy game, Mariota is at 0.28 net expected points per dropback over the past five games. That would rank fifth in the league if it were his full season mark. And again, that includes all the expected points he has lost on sacks. Mariota is 7,000. I'm not above playing him in cash, though I'm not sure I'll wind up there. I'm really hoping to get to Lamar Jackson at 74, but I'm pretty okay with rolling him out in tournaments and, you know, taking the savings on him and Corey Davis. Brandon, where do you sit on Mariota against the Jets?
Yeah, I like him. He's cheap enough. The Jets just sort of bottom eight, even over the past half of the season. Not enough of a pass rush to worry me there. So yeah, if I have to pay 7,000 or below on a quarterback, it's gonna be Mariota.
He's your favorite one there. Where do you sit on Corey Davis at 59?
He's just too cheap.
Yeah.
It's a little bit worrisome because he's only had four targets in each of the past two games and they're heavy favorites. And it isn't the best perimeter matchup by any means, but he's still too cheap compared to the other wide receivers in that range.
Yeah, I don't target Tremaine Johnson very often, but I also don't think I need to avoid him when it's a guy with Davis's heavy market shares, especially with price. Mariota healthy.
Yeah, and at that price.
And the good thing, too, for Mariota is he's been doing this even with his receivers banged up. Tajae Sharp is playing on one leg, essentially, and Taywan Taylor has missed the past couple of games, but Taylor got into full practice on Wednesday, so he'll no longer be throwing to something called Cameron Batson, which is something that exists. He can, you know, Jonnu Smith has looked a lot better. So I think
I was just about to ask you about him.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's kind of spendy. Jonnu is $5,300.
10.3, 12, 7.4, 13.3 fantasy points on 2, 3, 8 and two targets.
I think the 10.3 is the only game that Taylor played and he left early in that game. And I think his return might bump Jonnu down a bit. I'm also saying this as someone who's going to have a Taywan Taylor lineup on Sunday. So maybe don't listen to me on Jonnu Smith. But I think because he's young, it makes sense that he would be improving as the season goes along. So I'm not out on Jonnu, especially because he's still 53, but I think a tiny bit higher than it should be, especially with Eric Ebron being just barely above him at 56. So,
yep, I'm with you.
All right.
I just wanted to ask.
Yep, let's move on. Before we take a look at the bookmaker info for this week, FanDuel has more ways to win this season, one being their new free-to-enter Gridiron Pick'em. Just choose the winning teams for all of Sunday's games with no spreads, just straight up, and compete for a chance to win $10,000 split amongst all of the top pickers. If you're the top picker, you split it, the $10,000, with everyone else who has the same number of correct choices. $10,000 up for grabs every week for free, so be sure to head over to FanDuel.com and check out the Gridiron Pick'em for Week 13. Let's take a look at what the bookmakers are saying about this slate, starting off with the Chiefs and the Raiders. 55-point total here. The Chiefs, 15.5-point road favorites. Their 35.25-point implied total is a full 3 points higher than any other team on the main slate. The Raiders are 30th in adjusted defense by number fires metrics. The Chiefs are first offensively. Brandon, it's a huge spread, though. With that spread being so large, can you see yourself having a heavy exposure to any Chiefs players?
Heavy, probably not, other than maybe Kareem Hunt, but his snap rate probably will be like 60% in this because they won't need him. I want to play Mahomes. He's so expensive at 95. I want to play Tyreek Hill, but I love Travis Kelce. I mean, Oakland's garbage against tight ends. I want to play all of them. And of course I want to play Chris Conley, but
yeah.
Are you trying to like peel back your exposure, or are you just not that into them because, you know, for whatever reason?
Tyreek Hill is really expensive for this projected script at $8,400, so I'm not really into him. I like Kareem Hunt, and I'm okay with him, but the problem is that Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Todd Gurley all have projected higher passing game involvement than Hunt, and they're all priced right around him.
So you'd rank him fourth?
What's that?
You'd rank him fourth out of the top four?
I would rank him third ahead of Saquon, just because of the differences in their respective offenses.
I could see that, yeah.
I would have a hard – yeah, I would – I think that I have Gurley and McCaffrey in their own tier, though, followed by Hunt and Barkley in the same tier.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I just – I hate his volatile passing game work is really – it really bothers me. But I think if I do use him, I just stack him with the Chiefs defense. They are 43, which I think is underpriced given the state of the Raiders offense. So I think if I do go Hunt, I'm stacking it with the Chiefs defense. And I think if I'm going at a pass catcher, I'm not trying to pander to you, but like it's Sammy Watkins, it's pretty easily Chris Conley, right?
He's
price.
Yeah, he's been mid-priced his whole career.
But like in the games where Watkins has either been limited, I think he played 5 snaps last or 2 weeks ago. Conley has 10 targets in those 2 games. 8 of them came in 1 game, but like he's mid-priced. So like
he plays snaps, especially without Watkins. He runs routes. Like you could do worse.
Right. Especially mid-priced. Like if I'm choosing between him and Bruce Ellington at 49 and Watkins is out, I'm going to choose Conley, right?
don't ask me about this one.
Okay, yeah,
you're not going to get a straight answer.
Yeah, I think that's where I sit though. It's mostly Hunt and the Chiefs defense, followed by some Conley if Watkins sits. If Watkins gets in a full practice Friday, he is 6,000. I would use him because he's cheaper. But I think that's pretty much the only thing I would have here. The Bengals matchup with the Broncos doesn't jump off the page from a Vegas perspective, but I think it's still an intriguing game. Both teams rank in the top 7 in situation neutral pace, according to Football Outsiders. That could change with Jeff Driskel at quarterback, but hey, you know, decent pace regardless. The Broncos defense also tends to play worse when they have to leave Denver. So we talked about Case Keenum and the receivers and Phillip Lindsay, but Brandon, any Bengals for you here against the Broncos?
I'm not above a Jeff Driskel stack. I'm not above – I think that A.J. Green, you know, assuming – it seems like he's going to play. Yeah. Assuming he plays, I have no problems with the tournament dart there. It's such a big slate that I think it's viable to, again, think outside the box. And it's different here because Denver's not a necessarily tough matchup.
Right.
Especially on the outside. So, yeah, I like Green. I guess I'm just – probably not going to be able to justify Joe Mixon necessarily. I guess some, but just not as much as some of the other backs that he's priced around.
Sure.
And same with Tyler Boyd.
I agree with Boyd because of Chris Harris. Driskel is 64. Like, I know I asked you this earlier in the week, so don't cheat. But, like, ask the audience, I guess. If you, the listener, had to guess what Jeff Driskel's 40 time was, what would you guess? If you guessed anything other than 4.56, you're wrong. He ran a 4.56 40-yard dash at the combine.
That's 96th percentile, according to Player Profiler.
Yeah, like, dude can burn. He's no Trevor Siemian who runs a 4.38. That's a joke. Don't fact check that. But, like, dude can burn. He has a rushing touchdown in the 2 games he has kind of played in the 2 blowouts against the Saints and Cleveland. He can de-gaff it sometimes, so I think I'll have some Driskel lineups. I'll have some AJ Green lineups. Mixon, the case for him is that when Driskel came in, he gave 4 targets to Mixon out of 29 total. And this Denver rush defense is pretty bad, especially on the road. So Mixon at 74, I think makes sense. I would prefer if Cordy Glenn plays or left tackle. He missed practice Wednesday, so that's kind of bothersome. But I'm going to have game stacks this game, which is weird given that it has a low total. But, you know. Here we are, week 13. Let's ride. Even with the announcement that Cody Kessler would start for Blake Bortles, with Leonard Fournette's suspension, and with Jalen Ramsey at risk of missing this game against the Colts are still just 4-point favorites in Jacksonville after opening up as 3-point favorites. The over-under also dropped a point from 48 to 47 most places. And this game does feature some really good fantasy assets. You got Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton, Eric Ebron with no Jack Doyle. And possibly some Nyheim Hines at 48 and T.J. Yeldon at 49. So, Brandon, interesting game. The total's still pretty high. How are you approaching this game overall?
Probably Luck and Hilton stacks with T.J. Yeldon thrown in for some salary relief.
Luck's priced down to 82, which I think is because of the matchup. But as mentioned on the Monday pod, I don't care about the Jaguars defense anymore, especially if Ramsey's out. Like, Luck's been awesome. Like, yeah, from an efficiency perspective, he's been like a god for the past 2 months.
Yeah, the Jags are 17th in expected points per drop back since week 7. So it was just kind of been a mid-level pass defense. And if they're without Jalen Ramsey, like, I mean, he could score 30-plus points, Andrew Luck. So
yeah, and Josh Allen torched them on a deep ball last week.
Yeah.
And that's Josh Allen. And I'm not trying to trash Josh Allen. Like, he's been better than I expected him to be this year. But, like, it's a difference between him and Andrew Luck. So I think I will have more Ebron. Again, Ebron's probably my cash game tight end this week. But I think I'll have some Hilton, too. Where do you sit with those two guys?
Yeah, Ebron makes too much sense, provided that he's, you know, a full go. Yeah. He's going to play. He played 71% of the snaps last week, like I said before. We've seen him get, like, double-digit targets. We know he gets red zone work. So, especially without Marlon Mack, like, you'd expect that to go up. So,
agreed.
Cash game.
Yeah, and I think if I'm running it back, probably would be with Yeldon. I agree with you there. I think that 49, he makes sense. I might go D.D. Westbrook, I guess. But any Cody Kessler lineups? Had to ask.
Yeah, I'll have one or two.
Yeah, I think I have to. I've talked him up too much. Just usually jokingly, but, like, you know, if I talk him up jokingly, he goes off and I don't have him, I'll feel bad. So
yeah, I mean, I play a Chris Conley lineup every time he's on the main slate, and I did not play on the Monday slate where he went off.
Should have, man. I did. So I was very happy when this happened. But we have some very slight reverse line movement down in Houston for the Texans and the Browns. Line opened with the Texans as 6.5-point favorites, according to Sports Insights. It has since shifted to -6, even though 64% of the public bets are on the Texans. So this implies that there's money coming in the Browns. That has happened more than once this year and didn't always turn out super well, but now different coaching staff here. So, Brandon, what plays are you looking at in this game, and can you stack it?
Not really that heavy on this game. I just kind of like the defenses a bit too much, but I will still have, out of just necessity, some Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins stacks because they have that slate-changing upside. Each can go for 30-plus points pretty easily. I just don't know who I'd really run it back with. Maybe David Njoku, but
yeah,
I guess Nick Chubb, but, like, Houston's pretty stout up front. So about you?
I think Nick Chubb makes sense for tournaments because he's been getting more work in the passing game, and I value that. And he's a direct pivot off of Aaron Jones, who is $100 cheaper. So I think that I could talk myself in, like, this is a terrible matchup for him. And this is easily the biggest test of his role because they're underdogs because of how good the opponent is. But, like, he's been productive in the passing game. He's been running more routes. I could see myself running it back with Nick Chubb. Njoku, I'm okay with. He looked healthier last week. He is $5,500, so I'm okay with Njoku. Jarvis is $5,500, the same price as Antonio Callaway. So the thing with Jarvis is that his floor sucks because he's terrible. but the same is true for everyone else in that pricing tier. And, like, from a projected target perspective, I think he's kind of in line with everyone else in that tier. Like, Christian Kirk is $200 more than him. Josh Reynolds is $58. Robert Foster is the same price. Curtis Samuel's the same price. Deshaun Jackson is the same price. I'm going to have a Jarvis Landry lineup again. I'm probably going to, I don't know, Jarvis Landry or Antonio Callaway or David Njoku.
Njoku first, but if I have to choose between Callaway and Landry, it's going to be Callaway.
Okay. I don't blame you. He's looked a lot better recently.
They're playing almost the same snaps, running almost the same routes, and Callaway's been getting more of the deep targets, and it feels like every time I'm watching red zone, he's in the end zone getting a target. So
yeah, Baker's been looking his way, which has been good. The problem is that he has 5-2-5 targets in the three games with Freddie Kitchens, whereas Jarvis has 7-5-5. So I think I'd go Jarvis, but pretty close. Weather for this week, we could see a bit of some wind here, putting a damper on Jeff Driskel's first start. The winds are currently projected at 13 miles per hour. That's not stay away territory yet, but it's at least worth monitoring Sunday morning. Other games with wind speeds currently above 10 miles per hour are the Packers versus Cardinals and Panthers versus Bucks. Nothing is too bad right now, but I check back on the NumberFire games and lineups page on Sunday morning to check back to make sure everything is okay. As of right now, I would say all systems are go, but keep an eye just in case. Let's finish up here, Brandon, with our positional plays for week number 13, starting at quarterback. Who are you looking at there?
Jared Goff, your boy, 8,400. He's averaged 9.31 yards per attempt, 0.35 passing net expected points per drop back. Both are just elite marks there.
Quarterback.
Yes, very much so. Facing the Lions, who are 31st in adjusted pass defense, playing in a dome. Implied team total is more than 32 points. Since that Snacks Harrison deal, Detroit, 5th in expected points per carry, 31st, though, in expected points per drop back. So I know this term has died for whatever reason, but being that funnel defense, it just seems like Jared Goff is going to be the path of least resistance for the Rams offense in this game. He's probably, if I can get there, my cash game quarterback. I also love Russell Wilson. I don't think we've said his name yet. He is 7,700 playing at home against the 49ers. He has multiple touchdowns in all but one game. The floor has been really high for him all year. He's been just very efficient. Even without heavy pass volumes, that doesn't worry me as much because they are heavy home favorites. He's averaged 22 fantasy points and 8.5 yards per attempt in 5 post-bye games. And it, again, hosts the 49ers, who are just 23rd in adjusted pass defense, first matchup of the year with them. So I really like Russ at 7,700 for some of that, again, a shot at that slate-changing upside.
Yeah, with Russ, the concern is always, he'll drop back 17 times. But he did that against Detroit and scored 23.4 points. So whatever, he's fine. My first love is Cam Newton, because I'm not worried about him for the second time in a divisional matchup. As mentioned before, if we look at Cam this year specifically, he has scored at least 18 FanDuel points in every game except for one. He scored at least 23 FanDuel points in 7 of 11 games. Good floor, great ceiling. He hasn't had more than 3 touchdown passes in a game yet this year, which to me says we probably have not seen his true ceiling yet. Like, it's weird that a guy can be playing as well as Cam is and be producing as much and still not have a 4 touchdown passing game. That's in his range of outcomes this week. So I think I'm going to buy Cam Newton for tournaments and pay up at $8,700. I also love Lamar Jackson. I think the big concern for me is game script here. They could get behind because Atlanta's offense is very good and they're on the road. But I think that Lamar Jackson should benefit from playing indoors. He's not going to be efficient as a passer, but the rushing floor here is huge. If we look at his 2 games as a starter, he's had at least 70 rushing yards in both games. So basically what you do is you start off with 7 free points, assuming no touchdowns, no yardage at all, and that's just kind of where you start. He doesn't need touchdowns to have a floor, and if he does produce touchdowns, he could pop off. He's $7,400. I think he makes a lot of sense this week. I would love to get him in cash games. I'm just not sure I can. I hope I can. So hopefully something will pop up to give us that value. Maybe the Giants defense can help me get there, but I think that Lamar Jackson does make a lot of sense for both cash and tourneys.
Can you stack him with anyone?
John Brown's 48, playing on turf. I've lost money on John Brown a lot of times this year. He's kind of like cheap Jarvis Landry to me. Lost money on both those guys.
Their target distribution in it's the two stupid. Games. It's yeah, you can't follow it.
But if anyone is going to go off among the receivers in that game, it's John Brown, right?
Yeah.
So it's John Brown. He's 48. If he flops, he flops.
If any of them is going to get
die,
zero
targets. They die.
If anyone's going to get zero targets, it's any of them.
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on to running back, Brandon. Who are you liking there?
Yeah, I love Todd Gurley, of course. Now that he's back on the main slate. He's hard to get to, but, he's very much worth it if you can. But I still love Saquon Barkley at 8,600. The Bears, very tough up front. They're first in adjusted rush defense and rushing success rate allowed to running backs, but they're 21st in target success rate allowed to running backs, meaning that throwing the ball to Barkley would make a lot more sense than just trying to run him. Barkley has an 18.8% target share in 3 post-bye games. He's been involved in the pass game all year. And again, it's probably just, I actually kind of probably prefer that they're more vulnerable out of the backfield than on the ground, because that's where bigger plays generally come from. And I'm just trying to plug in all the studs, and that does include Saquon for me this week. If I jump the whole way down over, you know, some of the guys we've talked about already, I do like Matt Breida quite a bit at 6,400. He's still playing, you know, somewhat limited snaps, 47%, 49%, 60%, 48%, but the opportunities have still been there, helping me out. You know, the snap rate matters, but the touches per snap matters a lot as well. He's averaged 17 opportunities, 4 targets per game. In those 4, he's a 10-point underdog. I think he's in the mix as a viable stack option in this game, and just a sort of a viable value option against the Seahawks as well. And I also like Dalvin Cook quite a bit at 6,200. He's played 57%, 88%, which is great, and 59% of snaps his past 3 games. He's had 4, 3, and 3 targets in those. That works out to be a 9.7% target share. It's not nearly high enough to love, but it's noteworthy because, you know, Minnesota is a solid underdog against the Patriots, who are 25th in target success rate allowed to running backs. He's very cheap for his potential, for his upside. You know, I just love all the high-priced backs, and I think you're going to touch on, yeah, 2 of my favorite plays in that sort of range just above where Dalvin Cook and Matt Breida are.
Yeah, and Dalvin Cook, the one game where he played 88% of snaps was a game where they were behind. So I think that sets up well for him here. My first love is Christian McCaffrey, who may be the first player our lock-in for cash this week. Since the injuries, a wide receiver piled up. So the first game that Torrey Smith missed, McCaffrey has 25% of the Panthers' targets with 33% of their red zone targets. He is a slot receiver who gets a lot of good usage as a running back too. The Bucs allowed 78 yards to McCaffrey in the first meeting as a receiver. They allowed 100 or more receiving yards to both Tariq Cohen and Alvin Kamara. So this guy has a stupid floor-ceiling combination at $8,800, and I love him. Love him, love him. I'm going to have Gurley too, and I want to get to Gurley and cash as well, but I probably would prioritize McCaffrey over Gurley once you account for price. My second love is Aaron Jones, another potential cash game play here. The Packers are 14-point home favorites. Not sure why they're 14-point favorites, given how poorly they've played, but, you know, whatever it is. We got 5 games on Aaron Jones since his role expanded. The Packers have lost 4 of those. But despite those losses, so negative game script, he has still averaged 14.3 carries and 5 targets per game in that span. If we look at the 3 games since his role went up, since his snap rate went above 70%, he has 19% of the Packers' targets. So at $7,600, he is far too cheap for his role, and I adore him here. My third love is Philip Lindsay. I think that's the other guy Brandon was referring to as being in this range. He's $7,000, and I love the role he had last week. He didn't have any targets, but he played 63% of the snaps, which is the most he has played all season long, and he lined up as a wide receiver for 5 snaps and ran 12 routes, according to Pro Football Focus. So no targets, but as Brandon mentioned, he did get 5 targets in week 11 with Royce Freeman active. The Bengals ranked 29th against the rush, and they seem just decimated right now. So Philip Lindsay at 7,000, I think I like more than I thought I would for this week. Let's transition now to wide receiver, Brandon. Who do you love there?
It's going to be Kenny Golladay. I mean, again, I love DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Tyreek Hill if I can get there, but realistically I can't in most lineups because I'm prioritizing running backs. So kind of going to be maxing out at Golladay in most of my lineups at wide receiver. He's got 30.6% of the targets, 75% of the air yards the past 2 games. Marvin Jones, of course, out for the year. And the Rams are just generous. I know that they're getting Talib back, but they're still 26th in target success rate, 31st in fantasy points per target allowed to receivers. Kenny Golladay, very good. Kind of can, you know, pay off it with one big play. Speaking of someone who can do that, it's DJ Moore at 6,400. He's seen 6 targets per game over his past 5, which works out to a 20.7% target share. He's run a lot of routes in his past 4 games, 96%, 89%, 79%, and 94% of the routes for Moore in those past 4. I think he's still underpriced at 6,400 with his talent and that level of involvement. And the Buccaneers have let 12 different receivers score at least 15 fantasy points, the most in the league. I debated on this one a lot between, you know, the Corey Davis, the Cortland Sutton, even maybe Taylor Gabriel. But I landed on Josh Reynolds just because the offense is so good. He's playing indoors against a terrible pass defense. He's only 5,800. He's played 84%, 89%, and 98% of snaps in three games without Cooper Kupp, with big upside. And if I'm paying down at receiver, I might as well just kind of look for upside.
Yeah.
He's had 2.4, 17.5, and 17 fantasy points in those games. So again, he's got scoring upside in this potential spot. Again, I like Cortland Sutton and some other guys, but Reynolds for the floor and the upside combination, I think he's worth it at that price.
He's also decently cheap access to the best or second best offense in the slate. So I think that makes sense too. My first love is actually on the same team. That's Robert Woods, because he's played 63% of his snaps from the slots with Cooper Kupp out, which means he will avoid Darius Slay. And Woods' role without Kupp is really good. He's got 39% of the deep targets, and he's had at least 70 receiving yards in 10 straight games. That is a dumb floor. That is insane how high that floor is for Robert Woods. And you give him to me at $7,300, and I love that. I like Kenny Golladay, too, at the same price, but, I mean, Woods is really, really fun. My second love is Corey Davis, because he's had huge market shares. And I think, you know, Brandon mentioned he has just four targets each of the past two games. So I wanted to look at what he has done just since Mariota started playing better. So past five games, even in that sample, including those two four-target games, Davis still has 25% of their overall targets, 52% of their deep targets, and 29% of their red zone targets. So a massive involvement still. He has 21 or more FanDuel points three times this year, and two of those have happened since Mariota's health got better. So I am fully in on Corey Davis at $5,900. My third love, I guess, is Bruce Ellington. He's $4,900. He's played two games without Marvin Jones, and in those two games, he has 22% of the targets. He will avoid Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters by working in the slot. He's got a similar floor and ceiling to other wide receivers in the $5,000 range. So I think Ellington makes sense. I would love to get more money to pay up for someone else, probably around 5'5 or so. But if I really need to save, I think that Chris Conley makes sense at $4,500, and Bruce Ellington would too at $4,900. I know, right? Your boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get Mariota, we get Conley. This is just a great slate, man. Who do you like at tight end?
I like George Kittle. I know he's expensive at 6,800, but he's got a good floor, which is not something that hardly any tight ends offer. He's got 22 targets over his past two games. He's averaged 13.5 fantasy points in three games, started by Nick Mullins. Seattle is 23rd in fantasy points per target allowed to tight ends, and he has at least 48 receiving yards in 9 of 11 games. He's getting targets and yardage, which gives him a floor. He's kind of like a Zach Ertz, Travis Kelce light option. So I do think that it makes sense to prioritize him, if at all possible. Of course it's not, but there are a lot of cheap punt plays at tight end, including Cameron Brate at 4,900. He's a price play, which I hate. But he played almost 70% of the snaps last week. He ran a route on 72% of dropbacks for the Buccaneers. Both of those were season highs without O.J. Howard in the mix. Had just four targets to show for it, but the Panthers are very generous to tight ends. They're 29th in target success rate. So, you know, if you can't pay up, there are a lot of other options just to spend down on this week.
Yeah, I think that Brate at $4,900 is like you said, the floor isn't great because of the involvement, but no tight end has a good floor. So you might as well save some money there. My first love is Gronk at $6,700. And when he came back last week, he had a really good role. He played 69 of 70 snaps. It's a really big number. He had seven targets. Three of those were deep. Three of those were in the red zone. And that's out of 31 total throws from Tom Brady. So I think that Gronk is healthy. The Patriots as a team are finally healthy. They've got their offensive line back in order. They've got Gordon, they've got Edelman, Gronk, Michelle, and I think that makes me like this team from an efficiency perspective more. More red zone ops for the team, which should lead to more red zone targets for Gronk. My second love is Eric Ebron. He has 22% of the team's targets without Jack Doyle this year, which is a really good number. As mentioned, he played one game in an overlap with T.Y. Hilton, And he had 11 targets in that game, too. That was a game against Philadelphia, the first game where Doyle missed. And 11 targets there for Ebron. He's not going to face Jalen Ramsey, but if Ramsey's out, that can increase the touchdown expectations for this offense. And as we know, Eric Ebron, I think he's already set the franchise record for receiving touchdowns in the year with 12. So at $5,600, I will take that floor ceiling combination.
Do you remember when Eric Ebron couldn't score touchdowns? Like, that was his thing. That was like his defining characteristic.
So Kyle Rudolph, I remember, what year was it? 2016 or 2015? That year, he had more red zone targets than Eric Ebron had in his entire career up to that point. And like, now he has the franchise record in touchdowns.
It's crazy.
That's awesome. Like, good for him. Friend of the podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
Eric Ebron. It was like a year ago. Eric Ebron chatted about game planning and stuff with us. So, friend of the pod, and I'm happy to see him succeed.
Yes, absolutely. It's going to be chalk this week, too.
I'll take it. Who do you like at defense, Brandon?
The Packers, they are 14-point home favorites against a terrible offense, so one that's averaging 4.3 yards per play. It's like, not per carry, but per play. According to Pro Football Focus, the Cardinals' projected starters allow a 7.6% pressure rate, which is highest of the week. Only the Jets at 7.1% are also above 6.7, so Cardinals pretty dreadful there. Packers, though, are also second in projected pressure rate defensively at 14.6%. Third is Pittsburgh at 13.3%. So pretty sizable gap for the Packers. It's almost a guarantee that they lead, that they force Josh Rosen to throw. I love Rosen, but he hasn't been good this year. Stack well with Aaron Jones as well.
Yeah, the Cardinals' offense is so bad that they cut their right tackle. They didn't bench him. They outright cut the dude. So that's good. And Rosen's a good quarterback, just bad situation. Come back to him next year. My love of defense is the Colts. I do like the Giants. They're 33, and I think they're probably a good cash game play because they allow you to spend up at running back. But I do like the Colts. The Jaguars are missing their starters at left tackle, left guard, and center. They're also missing their backup left tackle, their backup left tackle, and they're starting Eric Flowers, which is not good. There's no Leonard Fournette for this game. That should keep the Jaguars from just running the entire game because Carlos Hyde's probably not going to do a bunch on the ground. And I love Cody Kessler. I adore him. But the dude hangs onto the ball far too long. That's not going to work against this offensive line. So the Colts, $4,200. I think they make sense. I like the Rams in the stack with Gurley. They're 41. The Chiefs are 43. Like, this is a defense, or this is a good week for defense. You've got options. So don't get locked into one because defense is super volatile. I would say mix things up, spread the wealth, and just take advantage of how many good choices you have for this week. Brandon, are the Giants your favorite low price defense this week?
They might be the only low price defense, other than maybe the Browns.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Like, Deshaun Watson's good, but he will throw some picks and take some sacks. So
yeah.
I think that's a fair assessment as well. Full slate this week, Brandon. You kind of talked about being picky, and you kind of have to be for this slate. It's tough, but it's kind of nice to have all these options.
Yeah, the one thing, though, is, and I got to remind myself this pretty much every day as I build lineups, you can't play everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, lukewarm on some guys and very into other guys, but just got to really narrow it down if you want to have a good disciplined lineup construction and bankroll management.
Can't play everyone, but I'm still going to play Cody Kessler. So there we go. Going to be a great week.
Can't play everyone, but you can set aside 10 Chris Conley lineups at least.
Yes, of course. He's above everyone, so that makes sense. We'll be back on Monday to recap these games, go through everything that went down on Sunday, the big takeaways from a DFS perspective, and to take a first look ahead to week number 14. You can get that podcast and every podcast by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. I'm sure other places as well, but hey, those are the main ones. You can find us up there. Brandon, if people have questions for you, where can they find you on Twitter?
I am at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. Welcome back to the Rams and the Chiefs on the main slate. making things a little tougher week 13, but a whole lot more fun as well. Hopefully it goes well for you. We'll talk again on Monday to break it all down. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number 5.